Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. It has been a while. There has been so much going on while we took our summer break. But now we're back. And I paraphrase Joan Rivers, the comedian, when she says, "Can we talk?" And I say, "We must talk because so much is going on. And it's going to be hard to cover it in the hour that we have, the hour and a half that we may have to take this evening. But what we're talking about is our freedom, how we're going to get our freedom, and how we get in the wrong direction. And the issue that we're going to start out with is black faces in high places. It's not the answer, it's the problem. But the question is, how did we get to a philosophy such as that? And we must continue talking about the 50th anniversary of the draft for Vietnam, the draft resistors, in Russia today, and so much carrying on about people resisting the draft and the draft resistors in Ukraine, and as I said, the draft resistors in the U.S., and how did we get to always coming up with the wrong philosophy, integration, on and on and on, the issues that never get solved. When we say the vote and then they mess with the vote, and it goes, there's just so many different positions that we've taken that guarantee no success. So let us begin with how did we get to black faces in high places? Well, that came from an era where we were excluded from everything. And remember, I think the one that everyone will remember, after Jack Johnson, you could not fight for the heavyweight championship. Now, that ain't much, but that's just an example of how we were kept out of everything. And one of the things that people don't know, couldn't fight for the light heavyweight championship either. Because if we were able to fight for the light heavyweight championship, we would have had a black light heavyweight champ. And so they played games with every philosophy that we've come up with, and now it is most depressing. And when we see four-star General Black, the head of AFRICOM from the Marines, we see the Secretary of State Black, who makes all of these ridiculous statements about America and Russia and the Ukraine. And then we have the black representative to the UN making statements that make you cringe, that Russia is violating the UN charter. And I'm saying, where has this lady been? America violated the UN charter so many times. I think of Nelson Mandela. Who put Nelson Mandela in jail? It wasn't the South Africans. They couldn't find him. But the American CIA found him, and they put him in jail. Who fought to keep him in jail? United States, Israel, and apartheid South Africa. Who fought to free them? Russia, Russian materials with Cuban soldiers and the brothers in the southern tip of Africa, the African National Congress. Communist, boys in the bush, Zimbabwe, the communists in southern Angola and the rest of the places fighting for liberation. And what was the weapon of liberation? A communist weapon of liberation, AK-47. What was the weapon of oppression? The AR-15, American. Do you understand when they say the words communism that we're supposed to hate? And now we are in a pivotal moment in history that could have terrific impact on people of color, oppressed people around the world, because we see all of the imperial nations, the nations that oppose the Russian Revolution. What does the Russian Revolution have to do with this? It has to do with the, not the advent, the world stage of communism, because when they always say, Martin Luther King comes up and says something, they say, well, you don't know that, the Russians told you to say that. And O'Malley Yeshitela says, you know, the African People's Socialist Party, you don't know that you're in trouble, the Russians told you to say that. And it goes on and on. And the Russians didn't have to tell us anything because we know we are suffering. But, and always remember that 1865, a black general in the Union Army wrote a book on African socialism. And so let's not be afraid of those words. Martin Delaney, as my sister Betty reminds me, let's not be afraid of the words communism and socialism, because they mean a lot, and we have to understand that, and we're going to have you know what I think about it. But I'm going to let others call in and tell us what they think of it, and we're back in our groove again, and to prove it, Sister Betty.
Good evening, folks. As you know, this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. And what's happening is, if we don't start educating our people, the fascists will. And so let's try and give them the tools to fight back with. That's what this program is all about. It's an anatomy of oppression which requires an anatomy of colonialism, an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And every colonial empire has to have its blackface. And what I mean by blackface, we know in India, they put up an Indian to keep the rest of the population under control until Gandhi came along. You know, in America, they have their chiefs that serve the White House, but Leonard Peltier is in prison. And tonight, we've got a special poet who stands for liberation, and that's why we call it liberation poetry. And as Ralph says, we're back in our groove because he's in the house with us tonight, and we're going to open up his mic and say, welcome back, Professor Louis. We missed you.
And give us one of those gems we've been waiting for months. And I hope that your hiatus enabled you to stir again or relax again your creative juices, as I know it has. Your microphone open. How are you, Professor?
Hey, I'm okay. How you doing, Ralph?
Well, we're hanging in there, like I say, waiting for your words of wisdom in poetry. So let us have it.
May we all have the grace to think about race, to put it in place, look it right in the face. I don't got the space to trace the full case, but who made up the idea? And is it new that I'm completely different from you? If I got dark eyes and you got blue, no one says boo. And it's true. Some got blonde hair, some got brown. It don't stop nobody from coming around, but had to begin to check out the shape we're in on account of different color skin. Health, housing, jobs, education, who owns the plantation, who gets the frustration, and what formation gets to run the nation. Racism might not be wise, but it buys and decides who lives or dies. A rich mixed couple got a mixed race baby. Woman in Harlem has a black baby. Both babies are one half white. Two babies' opportunities like day and night. For the Harlem baby, there is no maybe. He could say he's mixed till he goes crazy, 'cause he looks like Jay-Z. The mixed race baby's not to blame. He looks exactly the same. He's going Ivy League and got a claim to fame. And some white people are out the park, 'cause they're way more dark than light-skinned black people who carry the mark of being black, when it's a fact. If you look their way, there's darker white people every day. And that dark Latino guy, tell me why. He's either Hispanic or black. White Mexican guy is always sent back. His kid speaks English, so he could be white. He's Roberto, but Robert makes him white and keeps him out of fights. Information not in your graduation. Africa got white people to the fifth generation. What's the formulation of his designation? If he's not African, what is his nation? Lions and tigers are both big cats, but they can't make babies, and that's that. No black and orange lions, that's a fact. But Anglo-Saxons and Africans make it together. Chinese and Eskimos make babies forever, 'cause human beings are all one species. Nephews and nieces, same smelly feces. We're not divided up like Reese's Pieces. There are two kids in my own family. You can't define them easily. They're one-fourth Nepalese, more or less Indian, one-fourth Anglo-Saxon by way of Ireland. One-fourth of them comes from Peru. The last one-fourth, Ashkenazi Jew. When the census comes, what the heck? Don't break your neck. Which freaking box are these kids going to check? Don't need a book to look. It's smack in your face. There is only one human race, but racism got a different story. It was made up for the glory of one over another, for one to breathe and the other to smother. Right now, today, in the USA, you're either white or black. You hear come in or you hear get back. White gets the cocaine, black gets the crack. Try to avoid it with all your might. Here, you're either black or white, because white people made it up long ago. So they made white up high and black down low, from slavery to Jim Crow to mass incarceration, the continuation of the situation passed through the generations right from the jump. You're a champ or a chump. It rolled right on with Donald Trump. And when white working people get kicked around, we're told it's the fault of the black and the brown, when it's the super rich white guy holding us down. So it's good to know, wherever we go, race is a made-up thing. It's not something solid you bring like your ding-a-ling. You could feel for real it's a load of crap. But racism, we got to deal with wherever we're at. That guy on the street, how'd you know he comes from Africa when no one said so? Head to toe, he's darker than black people you see every day. Did you think about it, or just let it lay? Or do you pray it all goes away? And if black people here got some white in them, do white people here got some black in them? And did white slave owners make it with African women? We know it happened, not at a minimum. It's not an act. It's a stone-cold fact. That's what Thomas Jefferson did. This guy owned people who were his own kids. Did he take a sample of his own example, or was he tripping on NyQuil when he wrote the sequel? All men are created equal. The darkest people on this earth, dark from birth, they're at the bottom of Africa. For what it's worth, go north to Ethiopia. You don't got myopia, walk in the park. People there are a little less dark. Further north, you get Egyptians. Their descriptions, they're brown people, with some exceptions, that's their complexions. Little more north, Sicilians and Greeks, dark with curly hair. Even the geeks and even the freaks. All the way north, you get the Swede, blonde hair, blue eyes, super light indeed. It all goes gradual, from hot to cold. You could look till you get old, search day and night. There's no clear line between black and white. So race is made up to make you pay. But no matter what you say, racism does not go away. Race is bullshit through and through. Racism, we got to deal with, both me and you. And may we have the grace to think about race, to put it in place, look it right in the face. I didn't have the space to trace the full case, but I tried to say something about race.
All righty. We started off again, something to think about. Remember, folks, this program is archived. You can listen to that poetry over and over again, as I always do. And so we're into it. If you don't know about race, go back and listen to Professor Louie. Thank you, Professor Louie. Sister Betty.
All right. We've got to move right along because we've got a full house. We want to go to the person who has the latest up. We've got quite a few people who need to make comments and statements in terms of our comrade Mamiya. So without further ado, we're going to say the Mamiya Coalition's in the house. And Gil, your mic is open. And thank you for getting on this evening. We know you're very busy. Our marching orders.
Yeah, so the court date that was originally scheduled for tomorrow is postponed until next week. It's October 26th now. We've tried to get the word out. Both buses, the bus leaving at 6 a.m. Next week from the northeast corner of Union Square, and also the bus leaving from Newark City Hall at 6, both at 6 a.m. Going down there. It's an important court date because right now we have, you know, probably the best chance we've had in years to get Mumia actually out. We have six boxes of suppressed evidence that were found 3 years ago. And it's ridiculous. It, obviously, all the evidence, and it's just six boxes of of 32. We don't even know where the other 26 are, but they were found in a storeroom under tables and chairs, not in the chain of custody. The case should just get thrown out, but you know, as usual, we have to fight just to get justice for Omia. But we have a real shot now because, you know, it's hard for them to explain what happened here with this evidence, and it's obviously new evidence, it's suppressed evidence, and a lot of it points to the things that were done to suborn perjury in his case, police misconduct, prosecutorial misconduct, and for folks that aren't coming down with us on the buses, you know, you can get down there. The court opens at 9 a.m. We don't know exactly when his case will be on the docket, but it's 1301 Filbert Street. It's just a block east of the northeast corner of City Hall in Philadelphia. Since I'm here, I just want to also mention the topic of the day, about the lack of democracy in New York. I had planned to run for Congress as a Green this year, but Jerry Nadler only needed about a little under 1,300 signatures to get on the ballot as a Democrat. I had to collect 3,500. Even Gerald Nadler, as a Working Families, would have had to have 3,500 signatures. It doesn't make any sense. It's backwards, and even though Nadler is actually pretty good on Mumia, he's not quite as good as I am, and I would have liked the opportunity to debate militarism, you know, public education, public transportation, healthcare, militarism, apartheid in Palestine, et cetera. And the voters didn't get to hear about all those questions because we don't really have democracy in New York. We have among the worst ballot access laws in the country. Over.
Thank you so much for that, Gil. You said a mouthful there. There is no democracy anywhere as quiet as it's kept. Mr. Betty.
I just want to say that Gil has been a strong warrior for Mumia, but in addition to that, Gil was always there to help us campaign, to walk, to call for Sister Lynn. And if we had more warriors like that, Mumia would be out just the way the movement helped get Sister Lynn out. And so, Gil, I'm going to brag a little bit. The New Abolitionist Movement made a donation. We checked it out. We just got the report. So technically, I think we paid for at least 8 tickets. So if you're having problems getting that budget together, Gil, tell them again how they can get on the bus to support Mumia in Philadelphia, because we definitely donated some tickets.
No, thank you. And, you know, that we do have an online ticket program, but it's actually it's not clear if we can fix it past tomorrow. So, you know, for the next week, it's better to actually call the hotline. Thank you for bringing that up. It's we're going to probably remove the link, especially if it's broken. But it's better to call the hotline, 212-330-8029, to reserve a spot. You know, the remaining seats on the bus from Union Square. And I don't have the number in front of me, but if you go to freedomumia.com, the phone number to call People's Organization for Progress to get on their bus in Newark. I apologize for not having it in front of me.
Okay, thanks again for that, Gil. Sister Betty.
All right, we've still got Jericho in the house. Sister Ann had an emergency. She called just like 3 minutes before the program to say she's got a legal emergency. She's got to work on a case. But Jericho is still in the house. Brother Kazi, thank you. Your mic is open. And more power to you, Gil.
Sister, more power to you. I'm just listening tonight, but I do have something to say about that democracy thing and Mumia's case. He should get bail. He should get a new trial, and he should get bail. That's what should happen at the next hearing. You know, I don't know what's happening with his lawyers, but if they have the evidence, just like Gil just got through saying, with the, you know, suppression of all those boxes and evidence. He should get a new trial, man.
Well, the issue is the Mumia exception. There is no law specifically for Mumia because he is too bright. He rallies too many people. He's too much of a threat.
He's known all over the world.
To this society, because they are insisting on American exceptionalism. And when you speak truth, as Mumia does, as Julian Assange does, they speak truth. And as all of our revolutionaries who speak truth, they put them in the dungeon, and I call them death camps, because they hold them there until they die, and then they come out and they ask the people to save them from Trump. They ask black folk to come out and vote for Biden to save them from Trump. And I say, don't you know we've had Trump for 300 years? This Trump just wasn't born. He's merely echoing what we already have. And so how do we keep going for that? How do we continue ourselves being political slaves? That is, doing political work with no remuneration. What do we want? We want our political prisoners free. What do we want? We want a little bit of justice. And in the form, to begin, we talk about reparations. Before you do any of that, we don't believe you, and therefore I recommend folks of color sitting on their hands in this election, they should be afraid of Trump, not us, because we've been fighting Trumpism ever since we've been on this American continent and before, when Europe attacked Africa, has been so clearly delineated by Masri Ali when he says, Europe decivilized Africa. This is how long we've been, had Trumpism. And so they just gave it a new name. We're not afraid. Sit on your hands. I'm sitting on mine. I'm not going to vote for the Democrats. I'm going to vote Green Party wherever I can, and let Trump and Trumpeteers have the White House, because the Democrats are doing nothing for us. Sister Betty.
All right. We've got some callers on. And thank you, Brother Kazi, for making that comment. Did you want to respond?
I just wanted to say if Lynn was Mumia's lawyer and the people were outside rallying, if we took enough buses down there, he'd get a new trial and get bail set. That's all.
You got that right.
Right on.
She did things that the lawyers seemed to not want to go that far. And when she said, when she was alive, she says, why don't they? And I says, well, Lynn, you did it, and they put you behind in the death camps. That's why they don't step forward. You have heart, and it's very difficult to find people with the same heart and brilliance. And we had yearly, we have Remember Lynn. Professor Louis is the poet who comes on to remind us of poetry in this movement, as Sister Lynn taught us. Sister Betty.
All right. Thank you again, Brother Kazi. As I said, we're moving on. We're extending the time because we want to get everybody in. I want to veer from the script just a little bit. 6007. Did you want to make a comment? Look at your cell phone numbers, folks. Your last four digits are 6007. Did you want to make a comment or an announcement?
Oh, yeah, that's me. I'd like to make an announcement. Can you
All
hear
right.
me? So, this is Steve. Yep. How are you guys doing?
All right. They told me you was calling.
Good. Thank you. I've been listening. I just want to take this opportunity and thank you for allowing me to be on the program to make this announcement, and Sister Betty and also Brother Ralph. I'll be very quick. This is very important. On October 22nd this year, we're calling on people to raise your fist across America and take the struggle for justice back to the streets. on the occasion of the 27th National Day of Protest to Stop Police Brutality, Repression, and the Criminalization of a Generation. Basically, what's going on this year is that we have been working to revitalize the National Day of Protest, which began in 1996 and has been a national event since that time. But in the last several years, there's been some neglect. And so we are revitalizing both October 22nd as a National Day of Protest in New York and nationally. So in New York City, this coming Saturday, October 22nd, join us at Worth Square. That's Worth Square at 24th Street and 5th Avenue in Manhattan at 11:30 a.m. for a short rally. Upon completion of the rally, we're marching to the 33rd Street PATH station to take the PATH train to Newark to join the People's Organization for Progress. They are holding also on October 22nd, and they will be at the Newark Federal Building, and we'll be hooking up with them. So this is a coordinated fifth across the Hudson, October 22nd, march and rally between New York City and Newark, New Jersey. Round-trip pass fare will be provided for those who cannot pay, and donations, of course, will be welcome to help support this. So I can only encourage you further for more information by going to the website, October22.org. That's the full word, October22.org, to get a glimpse about what national actions are taking place in approximately 27 locations in the United States and one solidarity action in Canada. So with that, if there's any questions, Ralph or Betty, please shoot them at me. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that. That was Steve Yip, Kathy Chang, those workers who worked so hard for over the years for our stolen lives, and the book of the stolen lives got thicker than the New York City phone book. And so they've had to just add on year after year, but their work, the accumulation of their work is unbelievable. Always look up October 22nd. These are the warriors that keep us reminded of where we are and what we can do to change it. Thanks again, Steve. Sister Betty.
Please feel free anytime you have an announcement. You just text Ralph, and we'll try and get you on. You understand? Because the best form of government is when the people, the government is afraid of the people. What we've got now is the people fear the government, and protest tightens it up and switches it around.
Real protests, such as October 22nd, who talks the real talk about what is going on. Just a bit.
All right. We've got another warrior in the house, Fights for Mamiya and Fought for Lynn. I know that he's got some interesting insights for us. Henry Higgins, thank you for returning and joining us again this evening.
Thank you for this opportunity, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph and all our guests. Yesterday, Dr. Michael Schiffman from Germany, Sister Gwen DeBrow from New York City, and Sister Julia appeared on a program entitled I Mix What I Like by Dr. Jared Ball. And if you want to reprise that program, you can go to www.youtube.com/watch?ZY(KO)NPABO. And you can reprise the program. She shared with us a 10-point bullet roster that explains the reason why they would like people to endorse the open letter to Maureen Faulkner if you haven't done so already. And she lists 10 reasons why we should support this effort. Number one, the crux of the letter is that she is a criminal on par with Carolyn Doham Bryant, whatever the contextual differences. 2, in a historical bid to get death by incarceration banned, an abolitionist collective composed of the Abolition Law Center, AMISTOD, ACLU, Critical Resistance, etc., recently put out a milestone document on the initiative of the Right to Redemption group calling for the right to change, also called the right to redemption in prison, to be recognized as a human right. Maureen Faulkner is a perp through her silence, her demonization of Mumia. She reported seeing him grin at her evilly in court on a day when he was not even there, and the use she makes of the privilege of her race to sign off on the police narrative against an innocent black man. In the bigger prison we live in, the capitalist one, Maureen Faulkner, like all criminals, should be given the chance to make way for the truth before it is too late. In the letter I offered Maureen Faulkner, two historical examples of white women who took up that chance and saved the lives of black men, the Scottsboro Boys and our late Black Panther veteran, Albert Woodfox. We are not freeing our political prisoners to live in a world of retributive justice. Socialism cannot be retributive. We are serving. Maureen Faulkner noticed with this letter that she is not entitled to impunity, but is accountable in the face of the people's history. 6, the root meaning of the word petition is to aim at, to question, not to beg. There are political tremors of a legal coup against Krasner by the GOP, FOP, even more so as Mumia's court date approaches. Maureen Faulkner, who is heady and encouraged by her FOP friends, might well be thinking that the ouster of Krasner is a done deal. However, if M. Faulkner is already drinking champagne, the open letter is to let her know that we are watching her and that there cannot be any historical comfort zone for her. 8, the rock is the GOP-FOP alliance. The hard place is Krasner's corporate liberalism. The initiative is ours. Surprisingly, nobody to date has challenged Maureen Faulkner directly, either with a letter or a persistent incriminating debate. Meanwhile, we are leaving a paper trail for our own black legacy. 10, she will read the letter, her FOP advisors will, but the important thing is thousands will read it over her shoulders, and the media likes controversy. Hopefully, with a long list of signatures, it will help break the silence in the mainstream and independent press. And we are asking more people to sign that petition letter challenging Maureen Faulkner's position on denying Mumia his right to a freedom and his innocence of the guilt that he's charged for. And I'll leave it
Thanks so much for that, Henry Higgins. In case anybody doesn't know who Maureen Faulkner, he is the wife of the officer that Mumia is falsely accused of shooting and killing. They were after Mumia because he created a situation that found information, that found Philadelphia police corruption. They were prosecuted by the federal government. Many went to jail. Many were fired, and they said they would get him. This is the form in which they got him, and we are so politically impotent. We can't get our truth tellers out. We can't stop them from putting more of our truth tellers in, and we have to do better, whatever it is. Julian Assange is next on that list. Snowden told us what the truth was, and he skipped the country. He said he knew better. My brothers and sisters, we must do better. Thank you so much for that. Sister Betty.
Yes, I just want to say, if you really want to strike a blow against Maureen, show up for the October 22nd protest. Because what this really is it's a fist in the face to the army of occupation that this country has the nerve to call police. We don't have police. We have an army of occupation that kills us every chance they get, that brutalizes and rapes. And I'm going to open up the mic for Brother Dennis, who blew the whistle on this cop who's been raping women for decades. And he, I believe, got out on bail, and Brother Dennis blew the whistle on that. Brother Dennis, Your mic is open.
Uhuru, uhuru, everyone.
Freedom.
All, I want to say I'm grateful to see Professor Louis back.
Right on.
And thank you for a powerful poem, my brother. Brother Ralph and Sister Betty, I am always in awe with your very deep professionalism and the way you come across with information for us all. I'm going to read a quick poem by Mary Baraka. Then I'm going to go into a detail about black faces in high faith, places. And what we got here in this town, Negroes in high places, black faces in high places, but the same rats and roaches, the same slums and garbage, the same police whipping your heads, the same unemployment and junkies in the hallways mugging your old lady. Mary Baraka, formerly Leroy Jones, Tales Out of the Out and the Gone. 1972, he wrote that. I want to get into politicians, people who have authority, black faces in high places, the same individuals that go along with the colonial mode of production that keep you and I, us, we, from getting any freedoms because they perpetrate the colonizers' mantra, their mode of production, the imperialism, the forces. Now, I cite stories like Mike Brown, Freddie Gray, other details where we've been beat down, Walter Scott shot in the back, and the such. I'm going to go into when poor or working class black people experience hardship, that hardship is likely being overseen by an African-American or African in some position of authority. The development of the black political establishment has not been a benign process. Many of these officials use their perches to articulate the worst stereotypes of blacks in order to shift blame away from their own incompetence. Despite the lawlessness of the Baltimore Police Department, Mayor Rawlings Blake reserved her harshest comments for those involved in the uprising, describing them as criminal and thug. A few days later, President Obama took the mayor's lead when he referred to criminals and thugs who tore up the place. When Obama's spokesperson, Josh Earnest, was asked if the president wanted to clarify what he meant by thugs, he doubled down. When you're looting up a convenience store or you're throwing a cinder block at a police officer, you're engaging in thuggish behavior, and that's why the president used the word thugs. Rawlings Blake's outburst was hardly surprising. A month before the unrest in Baltimore, she had ranted that black men were responsible for violence in the city. And these are black faces in high places, strumming along the colonizers' claim that we need more police, when you and I, all of us on this broadcast right now, know that the thugs come in uniform. They come with badges. When one man or woman is approached by these thugs, they come as gangs. These are the criminals. We mentioned the system itself, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but just to have the audacity to be black or African saying you're running for some office somewhere to protect the very same people that you say that are getting the most harshest treatment. When you get up in there, then your whole tune changes. Somehow you have a psychological issue. I think that, as a matter of fact, you're insane when you get an office or a seat. You don't do like our brother. I forget the brother's name in New York who's doing so much for African people. But I'll say that he's one of a few. We talked about Harold Washington did so much. Charles Barron.
Charles Barron in New York, Washington in Chicago.
Yes, yes. Washington did so much for African people. And these men, Charles Barron, I'm surprised is still living, but they murdered Harold Washington, as we all know. They murder any one of us that would stand up. They will murder you if you stand up too tough. And then we get down to Chairman O'Malley Yesitella, who on July the 29th, on a Friday morning, 5 a.m., flashbang grenades and a raid on the party's house, the Uhuru Movement, African People's Socialist Party, not only in St. Louis, Missouri, but in St. Petersburg, Florida as well. and the Uhuru movement, who's going out getting reparations for African people, lived on another side of town. And simultaneously, they were hit by these FBI thugs, by these criminals who claim, and these same criminals who allowed the insurgency in the United States Capitol, who allowed themselves and were involved in the insurgency. So when you talk about criminality and the rule of law, then you and I should not be stupid that they mean that that means boss, that means control, and we must break away from this control. And the only way to do that is scientifically with a practice that works. And I can think of not too many that do scientifically. We can no longer get out and do outbursts. We must do everything in a strategic move. We must begin to defend ourselves, but as a collective. This thing is happening throughout the world. We see things changing. Democracy is falling apart. The political system is in tatters. Over in England, right now, they're ready to oust the prime minister. It's crazy, but I'm happy. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Thank you so much for that. And Sister Betty?
Well, we might as well keep it moving. We got one member of the Black is Back Coalition standing up. Sister Lisa McKimba, your mic is open and welcome.
Well, as our brother just told us, they were after Chairman O'Malley Yeshitele because they said he was from getting his orders from the communists. And I always thought, and I said, 1965, have we forgotten that? Fannie Lou Hamer said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and we don't need anybody else to tell us that we're sick and tired. And remember, Martin Delaney, 1865, African socialism. And so this is a terrible game. It's an insult that we need somebody. But I should not go on. Sister Lisa, your microphone is open.
And welcome.
Thank you so much for my mic being open. I was listening to our brother Sayaro. He was so powerful. And your other speakers, Henry Hager, I haven't seen him in a long time. But I want to say I appreciate the work that you all are doing and your radio program as well. And Uhuru Black is back. Let me just say this real quickly first. Get on the bus November 5th to D.C. Please. We need numbers. We want them boots on the ground. For November 5th on, you know, in D.C., and also register for the conference November 6th. You can go to www.blackisbackcoalition.org to register. I know that you can't say this enough in terms of how we have to organize and fight back, but we must do that. We know COINTELPRO has always been in operation, and COINTELPRO, the FBI, this is happening regardless of who's in the White House. And let's be clear, this is a Biden administration. But we have to organize more than ever to really fight back against what is going on. And one of the ways that we can do that is show we will not be afraid. We are not scared. You will not do what has happened before. We are organizing and fighting back is to come out for that march on the White House November 5th. But also, let me just say this. Something very interesting. As you know, the Black is Back Coalition passed a resolution condemning the attack on the Uhuru House because it was an attack on all of us. It was certainly an attack on those who worked so closely with Chairman O'Malley Yeshitele and the African People's Socialist Party. And I'm proud of one of those people that does work with them. I'm very proud of the work of the Black is Back Coalition and the Uhuru movement. But the chairman also he enumerated the goals, the objectives of COINTELPRO, and I think everybody needs to go back and reread them because we always hear about preventing the Black Messiah. But it's much deeper than that. And goal number 5 talks about preventing the youth from being connected to the Black liberation struggle. You know, they've got to deter that. They've got to break that up. And one of the things that the African People's Socialist Party was doing in St. Louis was they had built a basketball court because they were saying that inner city youth in St. Louis, they didn't even have a basketball court to play on. They didn't have anything like that. So they built a basketball court And in the middle of the basketball court is a Black Power symbol, and the name of the team is the Black Power Vanguard. And they're going to be, you know, starting like having various teams and, you know, and various regions, however they do that, you know, getting these teams to play against each other. But, of course, providing them also with political education. And that, the FBI said, the United States government said, cannot happen. So no matter what we do, no matter what we do, they are after us. But I think people should be aware of that as well, because the FBI, the federal government, the United States does not want our youth to be under our influence. That's a heavy statement.
Well, thank you so much for that, Lisa Davis. And we understand that because the control of the public schools in all inner cities is under the Democratic Party. And they fought us when we decided to have Black History. It wasn't so long ago. 1965 was when we first introduced it, fought to introduce it into schools. And here we are today. They don't want history. It might make people uncomfortable. And I'm saying, well, the philosophy of history is to inquire, to teach students in honest inquiry and thought. They don't want that either. And so
I can't
talk long enough and clearly enough about the control of our youth. Sister Betty.
We want to have Sister Lisa come back. In the beginning of COVID, Sister Lisa was of great help to us, making us aware of alternative solutions to just taking the vaccine. And she also made it clear that the people of China were doing and on the road to success in terms of controlling this pandemic. We'll never forget that. In our time of crisis and need and fear, Sister Lisa gave us the medical know-how to survive. And we are hoping she'll return in the future to bring us up to speed with these latest pandemics that are happening. In addition to that,
real quickly, the University of Boston created a new coronavirus. They combined the Omicron virus with something that they did, and it has an 80% kill rate in mice. The Omicron virus previously didn't have that, didn't kill any mice, but it has an 80% kill rate in mice. Boston University did this. The United States.
What do we call it? Germ warfare.
Exactly.
United States and major nations. And biological warfare is out there, and sometimes I wonder whether this stuff just escapes or whether they put it out there to see how effective it is. And we must also be aware of that. Thanks again, Lisa Davis.
All right, call in any time. We're going to go to 0771. Pay attention, guys. I know most people have not memorized their cell numbers, but 0771, welcome. Your mic is open. Do you want to say a few words? If you're just listening, it's okay, but you're more than welcome to say a few words.
Hello. I am a first-time caller, but long-time listener, part of the show. My name's Ayana. And I'm just listening this evening. Thank you, guys.
Where are you from?
I'm from Brooklyn, but I'm domiciled in Atlanta, so.
Okay. Calling in from Atlanta. We're going to get this voice around the country and around the world. Sister Betty.
Thank you very much for calling in. We're going to go to our next caller. Again, if you're just calling in to listen, that's okay. 7882, your mic is open. 7882, do you want to say a few words? 7882? Okay, we're going to assume that this person is just listening in. All right, we're going to go to our next call. Joel, your mic is open.
And to continue with our discussion about the 50th anniversary of the draft, we have a young man who did resist the draft, who did go to the death camps, who did organize in the death camps, who is a strong soldier, and who understands and is going to give us a little history and a little theory on this situation of resisting the draft. Joel, would you break it down for us?
Yes. Thank you very much for, again, the very high praise that you're giving me, and I hope I can live up to it.
I want to say that
Ralph called my attention today to a program on WBAI in which apparently they were trying to build up sympathy for their pawns in Ukraine by pointing to Russian youth that are involved in a movement that includes draft resistance and is trying to encourage the youth not to basically to back out of the war at a crucial period. And I want to say that they also had some American draft resistors on at the same time. They didn't really ask the American draft resistors to analyze the politics of it, but just to give a sample of some of their experiences during the Vietnam War. But the overall implication was that the war in the Ukraine on the part of Russia, which calls it a special military operation. The U.S. also, don't forget, the war in Vietnam was undeclared and an illegal war, but it was very different from what's going on the part of the Russians in the Ukraine. First of all, the CIA takeover of the Ukraine in 2014, that was the real invasion of the Ukraine. The Ukraine was seceded out of the Soviet Union the same way that international forces encouraged the South to secede from the United States in order to try to preserve and build politics around slavery, which of course made the whole textile industry around the world extremely profitable and created a huge portion of the initial investment capital that went into creating capitalism and from the start imperialism. I know there's a famous book by Lenin that says imperialism is the last stage of capitalism, but it's also involved in the very first stages because that's where the so-called primitive or initial accumulation of wealth took place based on actual slavery. And also was pointed out in that show, I think, again, in a twisted way, bringing up, well, this is in defiance of the UN Charter. Do we forget that the UN was baptized in the blood of millions of Koreans and that that was the UN continuation of a war? The UN part of it started in 1950, but the United States part of it started in earnest in 1945. When they wanted to build, to prevent the liberation of Korea from Japanese imperialism, which was supposed to be their enemy, but immediately they worked with keeping the Koreans that were working as Japanese puppets in South Korea in power and in defeating the liberation struggle that was able to take power in North Korea, partly because of its proximity with China, which in which a revolution was also in progress and by 1949 had taken power, on the mainland, but so there was so the U.S. started that war really in 1945, and then in 1950 the United Nations joined in with all the imperialists of the world to fight to keep imperialism, including the Japanese collaborators, in power in South Korea. World War II is supposed to be against fascism and against the Japanese allies of fascism, but it didn't work out that way when push came to shove, as soon as the war could be called over. But what was not over is the global class war, and that's what we see raging all around us, and that's what contains the major problems, but also the major major solutions, because the imperialists, the capitalists, the super rich, the top bankers, and so on, none of these people are going to step down on their own accord. It's unfortunate, but we have to recognize, and we have to recognize and take up the struggle to use force to bring them down as one of the components, along with the universal sense of justice, and along with the great strength of the oppressed people and the exploited working people who create all the wealth of the world, only under capitalism to have it monopolized and accumulate in the hands of really the worst tyrants that ever existed on the face of the earth, bar none, especially when you look at the scale of what they've stolen and the means that they use to keep it in their hands, starting going on three world wars now, including the one in the Ukraine. And the aim of the, now that war was provoked again by a U.S.-led NATO and European Union invasion of the Ukraine, and it's and the setup of a military configuration which is designed to force Russia to choose between a war, which takes a great price, and the total dissolution of the of the Russian Federation, and the takeover of Central Asia through that by U.S. imperialism. And this was put out by the neocons who were openly running the government during the George W. Bush administration, but who still run the Defense Department and the State Department. And what they said is that the key to U.S. control of the world, which they favor, is the takeover of Central Asia and the destruction of Russia, which had defied the imperialists on many occasions, and China, where which still is ruled in the name of in the name of communism, and as a result of a revolution by the workers and oppressed peasants in the name of and in the program of communism, because they
no,
took, yeah.
That is complete history of why the UN is at it in Russia. You detailed it. People should listen again. It is archived to see where it started, 1945. And what is it? The UN is supporting imperialism and opposing communism and socialism. And I have repeated over and over on this program, we have so many Americans who say, that sounds like socialism to me. And I say to them, well, without Social Security, I would be in great trouble. And I'm not the only one. So people should stop worrying about that term socialism and begin examining it. And with that said, Sister Betty.
I want to thank Brother Joel. I want people to understand that if you don't learn history, you will be doomed to repeat it. If you don't remember anything else, just remember what Brother Dennis is trying to tell you about colonialism. And what Joel is saying is, it started with slavery. That's how capitalism got its base. That's how capitalism keeps its base. And there's all kinds of slavery. When you pay taxes and you can't get a hospital, when you pay taxes and your water has arsenic, and they're giving billions to Ukrainians to kill Russians, there's something wrong with this picture, and that's what they call capitalism. We have another number, 1111. Do you wish to speak, sir?
Yes, I apologize for coming so late into the discussion, but as a teacher, I can affirm, I can attest, I can confirm that our schools are doing a very effective job in keeping us in the dark, in keeping us dumbed down, and ultimately, being effective in selling us all these bogus wars. As just one example, someone mentioned, of course, several callers had mentioned the Russian-Ukraine fiasco, but how come no one seems to connect the dots and ask if so far we've given $200 billion to Ukraine, and we've really got nothing other than, I guess parading all our weapons, that are eventually going to be sold, to countries who we've convinced that they need them. But how come we couldn't just offer that as aid to Russia and say, hey, let's resolve this. Here's $200 right off the bat. I mean, that's from America alone. Imagine the European Union's contribution and all that stuff. So clearly, clearly this is not the agenda is not to end the this mess, but of course something that I will admit I don't know at this point what's going on, but clearly for $200 billion at least from the U.S. alone, this matter could have been resolved in other manners. Also relatedly, our U.S. media has not really dignified, certainly not the New York Times. The Washington Post just dismissed the story that came out last week from the world's leading medical journal, The Lancet, from London, which said in no uncertain terms, quote unquote, the COVID-19 virus very most likely came out of a U.S. lab. As was pretty obvious, if you just connected the dots right from day one, especially if you consider the media report in February of 2020, which anyone can Google, that stated the COVID-19 has ravaged China's economy more in 3 months than Trump's tariffs could attempt to do in 3 years. So, I'm laughing, man. I'm being cynical, but apparently, that's the agenda that's being shoved down our throats for us to become cynicism, to become cynical, to just adopt this narcissistic attitude and say, oh, well, we can't do anything about it. Maybe we cannot do anything physically about it, but as a teacher, we have to be enlightened. We have to be aware as to all this duping that's been going on, not just for days, not just for years, but clearly, as Ralph has pointed out, and the other callers too, for centuries. And I think I'm going to pause right now before I lose it, but I thank you for the opportunity for me to chime in, with my insights that are, again, reported, but just not dignified. Thank you again.
Well, thank you so much for that. And as we all know, the basis, the so-called basis of American public education, the dean of public education, John Dewey, the dean of public education, Paolo Ferrere, have advocated the instruction that opens the mind, that faith focuses on problem-solving, inquiry, and critical thinking, and that teaches students to think for themselves rather than blindly ingest the knowledge imparted by their instructors. And in the early years, we had a member of our organization, Harvey Shapiro. When he was asked to describe American education, his answer was, the miseducated lying to the miseducated to be. And so we see that we have gone away from the foundations of American, so-called American educational thought, so-called John Dewey philosophy when we abandon inquiry. And people are abandoning inquiry boldly. We don't want to learn about that because it might make a white student feel uncomfortable. And I can, don't get me started. And so let us continue, Sister Betty.
We want to try one more time. 3036, did you want to make another comment? 3036, did you want to comment on anything?
We cannot hear you. Well, I would like to know what you're saying, but we can't understand that, and I would appreciate if you would rethink it. Because you want to get that message, whatever it is, out to as many people as possible, but we have to understand it, and so we must go on to the next caller.
Thank you much. Did you want to come? All right. Thank you very much for getting on. All right. We want to continue. 2154, your mic is open. 2154, your mic is open.
This is Tom. My phone number ends with 2154. I would like to go back in history a bit and talk about the American battleship, the Maine, which blew up in Havana Harbor. At that time, Cuba was a colony of Spain. The American government knew that they can use that as an excuse to take over a base in Guantanamo. The lease was for 100 years and it has expired, but we're still there. Also to take over Puerto Rico and Guam and the Philippines. Then Japan was at that time was a closed feudal society, but they were observing this, and they decided that they better completely modernize their military, and or else they will fall under the same problem that the Europeans had dominated China, and so they, so the Japanese they completely modernized their military, and they invaded China, and they took over what is now Taiwan and Korea, and anyway, at the end of the in 1945, the Japanese had realized that there was no way that they could defeat the United States, and they put out peace feelers. Their navy had been destroyed. Their air force had been destroyed, and the United States decided to drop the two nuclear bombs on two Japanese cities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and on the pretense that the Japanese would never surrender, and we would lose a lot of soldiers occupying invading Japan itself, and of course after the war we did take over Japan, but there was no resistance, and this was really dropping those two nuclear bombs and destroying destroying two Japanese cities. Actually, that was to tell the Russians that they had these atomic weapons, and that they were going to decide who's going to be the dominant power in the Far East. Well, it didn't work because French Indochina, which included Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos, they became independent, and China itself became independent, and so
you conclude.
Last Saturday,
Tom, we got to minutes.
What?
Tom, we got to go now. Okay,
something very interesting happened to me last Saturday. There was Japanese had a street fair, and so I was sitting on the bench where I usually sit, and one of the vendors, they were selling cartons of Japanese noodle soup, and they were right next to where I was sitting, and I asked the one in charge of that vendor if that I didn't want to lose my seat, and I depend upon a walker, and I would have to. Is there any way that I could just pay them? They were selling these cartons of noodle soup for $15. And this Japanese vendor, he said, "That's okay. You don't have to pay for it." Well, you know, I felt really sort of uncomfortable with that, but it showed. You know, that this was a very generous thing he did. And so I said, do you take any tips? And he said, yeah. So I said, I gave him $10. And I just want to say that that was a beautiful thing that he did, and that's all I have to say.
But thank you so much. Shows that no hard feelings. Wars come and wars go, but people are there all the time. But the real bomb that was dropped with the defeat of Japan, when Douglas MacArthur was put in charge, one of the things that the U.S. government insisted of the Japanese who were under Douglas MacArthur, that they would start industry with American money, but with no unions. And that's how you saw the change of automobiles from predominantly American to, I think about 15 years ago, it became predominantly Japanese. But it's American money, American profits. They just put a lot of Americans out of work. But many Americans do not understand that reality of capitalism and what it does. The Japanese were so-called the enemy, but what they did was they turned that into a profit-making business. Never mind Pearl Harbor. And all of you who are of a certain age remember when there were no Japanese cars. Now the majority of cars on the highway are Japanese and Americans by the tens of thousands in the automotive industry have been put out of work. And now we have, when they're talking about new jobs that have been created, they're in the service industry, nowhere near what was jobs for Americans, high-paying pensions, et cetera. The students that we see nowadays are living off of their folks' pensions, and they're beginning to cut back pensions. even here in New York, they're talking about privatizing the pensions of the city workers, and it goes on and on. They give it and they take it away. Sister Betty.
I just want to remind people the history that Tom is talking about. We have an elder, and we have to honor our elders, and we respect Tom because of this. He gave up his time to free Sister Lynn freely. He has always supported political prisoners. But one of the things that we should remember is what Malcolm X told us. It is about what the white ruling class elite controls our minds. In the First War, they tried to tell us that the Russians were our friends and the Japanese was our enemy. And the Chinese were our friends and the Italians were our enemy. But after the war, when they had all of their colonies that they took from England, suddenly, the Chinese are now our enemies, and the Japanese are our friends, and the Russians are our enemy, and the Italians and the Germans are our friends. It is not about who is your friend and who is your enemy. It is about where they stand on the spectrum of human liberation. And if you don't know history, what Malcolm tried to teach us is they will have you thinking your friend is your enemy and your enemy is your friend. So we don't let European Americans who are slavers and are responsible for 400 years of slavery and another 100 years of the new slavery tell us we shouldn't like the Russians, because the Russians never had African slaves. And so if the enemy of my enemy.
I think you got it wrong.
I think I got it wrong, but you know what I'm trying to say. Nobody can tell me who my friend is. Nobody can tell me who my enemy is. And that's what this program is about. You're learning history. You're learning to analyze oppression. And I respect all of you who get on this call and try to do this. If we don't do this, we're going to go down for the new fascism. And we're going to go down hard. You need to pay attention and read your world.
And what
Paulo Freire.
And what Sister Betty is saying, to quote Paulo Freire and John Dewey, what we are talking about, education is problem solving. Education is inquiry. Education is critical thinking. And we must do all of that, but we must have correct information to do this thinking. When we say free Mumia, we're talking about freeing ideas. He has written so many books, and each book is more wonderful than the previous book. In the beginning, when we opened up this program, we used to pass out some of Mumia's books as gifts. And we see Brother Snowden. What did he do? He told us the truth, and we are sitting on our hands. He is not even raised in this question of who we're going to elect as leaders. And this is our problem. We must begin to, as Sister Betty told us, read our world. Know who's on our side. It's pathetic of the people who call themselves progressive, that we allow these things to happen. Mumia is innocent, and we have lawyers talking about forgiveness. Forgiveness for what? We have our political prisoner, Richard Williams, who died in the death camps. And when people were talking about, well, if he says that he's sorry, and his answer while he was in the death camps was, why would you ask me to say I'm sorry? Ask the American government to be sorry for what they have done and what they are doing to the people of America. And he says, don't put me on any list that says that I should apologize or that I would be sorry. Sister Betty.
So, Brother Dennis, you want to repeat again the message that Sister Lisa gave about the march on Washington, November 5th and 6th? You want to take us home with...
Yes, that'll be that march will be be a rally on that Saturday, which will be the 5th, and then a conference that Sunday. The Black is Back Coalition You can go to blackisback.org and register. Register for the Black is Back March rally on the Saturday the 5th and Sunday the 6th. Please do. I think that all of us getting involved, all of us moving together, will energize each and every one of us that does get involved, and we will be able to bring back on a lot of knowledge that we can spread while we organize in the field. As a lot of you all have been doing through the course of time, young people like myself, that's a joke, stand on your shoulders, and we must continue the work. The revolution continues. So we look forward to seeing you on the 5th and 6th of November. Uhuru.
Uhuru. Good night, my brothers and sisters.
And don't forget October 22nd. You can Google it and show up for that march against the army of occupation.
And remember, our book of study is the Jericho website. Good night and much love, my brothers and sisters.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.